We made this.
A podcast all about the Marvel Cinematic Universe for the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host, Carpenter, and today we will be diving into the fifth episode of the Disney Plus series Loki. This episode is called Journey into Mystery. My guest this week to discuss this is Craig. Hi, Craig.
Your savior is here. That's the only intro I could have thought of. But hi, how are you?
Are you burdened with glorious purpose?
I'm always burdened with something, so let's just say glorious purpose.
That's a mood. Loki's all about positive thinking, right? So surely everything he does is a glorious purpose.
Yeah, why not?
Stay positive.
Yeah. He's always positive about how great he is, so we should all do
the same.
That's true.
So, how have you been enjoying the series so far, or not enjoying the series so far?
No, I've been really enjoying it. I've been reviewing it on my website, and I don't think I've given anything lower than an 8. I gave 1 9, which was last week. So I've always enjoyed the show. I love the time travel hijinks. I love the insanity. I love how it keeps surprising me, because I remember at the end of episode 2 when he escapes with, well, we didn't know her name at the time, but Sylvie. And I was thinking, okay, so this is how we'll see him like running for president in the trailer, because he's just going to cut about and cause mischief as throughout the timeline. And then the following episode, it was, okay, that's not what the show is. And then the following episode, they did other things I didn't expect. So every week I'm like, that's not what I was expecting. And I love it. I love to be surprised in that way, because it certainly did paint a certain narrative, as in the trailer suggested Loki is going to be working with this time bureau, this, you know, the TVA to...
Yeah, it really did.
Yeah, to whatever it is, to stop a villain or whatever. And then they get rid of that in the second episode when he runs away from them. And then it's like, okay, now he's going to be messing up the timeline and just having fun. Nope, he's not doing that. And now it's bringing down the power behind the throne, which is, well, we're probably going to get that next week.
It's definitely not particularly predictable, which is awesome. I mean, I don't really know if I ever really predict things. I mean, I do like a little bit, you know, like I think the last time I was on, I was saying that I don't think the timekeepers are real, and they weren't, they were robots, so...
Yeah.
Point to me. But like, you know, like, yeah, I would have said the same as you when you, you know, we were going into this, that it seems like Loki's going to be messing with the timeline. And like, he was a little bit, but that's not the main vibe, and that's really cool.
Yeah. And I try and predict things, or I'm just predisposed to do it, because when I review stuff and I know the material by and large, I don't really know an awful lot about modern Loki comics, which I think this is, I'm going to say, loosely based on, because Presidential Loki was in this episode, but it isn't the Presidential Loki story. There is no story. He was just there. So that story happened, but we're never going to see it, probably. So sometimes you just think, okay, I think it's going to go in this way, or these characters are developing along these lines or whatever. So I tend to be more character focused in my predictions rather than plot focused. So I think I know where some of the character stuff might be going, but in terms of plot, no idea.
To give it a score, I think I might keep this up, because I'm not very good at giving things a score. As a reviewer, you're quite good at that. So I'm putting this on a nonsensical Loki-ometer. I think my last one was like, 66 or something like that. So I think we're going to give this episode a 442 Lokis. Take that as you will.
Yeah, whatever that means, yeah.
So shall we dive into the episode?
Yeah, let's go for it.
How did this episode start? It started with Loki waking up after being pruned.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Faced with
and meeting
versions of himself. Yeah.
Yes, the sort of the initial ragtag team of Lokis.
Yeah.
That we meet. I love Kid Loki. I love him so much. He's a good lad. And I'm hoping that the lack of teen Loki will lead to a teen Loki in Young Avengers.
Yeah, well, that's Kid Loki will grow up to be teen Loki by the time they get around to it, if they do it.
Yeah. Yeah, which would be great. And then also classic Loki, iconic.
Mm-hmm.
Whose horns very much look like some piping that someone's just like bent round.
Except
you know,
from when he was killed.
To, like, proper animal horns.
Except from when he was killed. The helmet that fell off was quite robust looking. So, I don't know what happened there.
It was. I love his cape, though.
Yeah.
He's got a big circle cape. Very classic. And, like, the little diamonds on the triangles coming out of his neck. It's great.
And I love how MCU keeps finding excuses to give us these comic book costumes. The classic, ridiculous-looking comic book costumes. Because in First Avenger, you got... The propaganda side of it was Steve wearing his classic costume, and then you get a more practical one when he goes into action. WandaVision, it's a Halloween costume, her original costume, and so on.
Yeah, and we get Billy and Tommy, like Wiccan and Speed, and also Vision and Pietro's original costume in that as well, which was very cool.
And now Loki.
Oh, and also Sam's as well. We got Sam's kind of. Is a lot more in line with the comics. But yeah, now Loki. We also had initially in this ragtag Loki team was Boastful Loki, as he seems to be known on the subtitles, who is sort of a Thor-looking Loki. You know, perhaps a Loki that has, like, stolen Mjolnir or something. He seems to have his own version of a hammer. But definitely just as wily as he betrays Kid Loki later on. And then, of course, the iconic Crocodile Loki, or Alligator Loki, depending on who you are.
Yeah, Alligator Loki was amazing.
I love that little guy so much.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it was so good. I love that that Loki, our current Loki, seems to have his head, you know, solely focused on, you know, on the goal. Like, he's a conjurer, but he's not just, like, immediately transforming back into his 2012 outfit every step he gets, every chance he gets. And I think that probably says a lot about him and where his head's at, is that he's not immediately trying to, like, look the Loki part. He's, like, trying to figure out the whole Timekeeper thing and the Sylvie thing and then, like... You know, I feel like maybe part of him doesn't even think that 2012 costume suits him at this point, because he's like, I don't know, I'm just going to keep the shirt until it gets too ripped, I don't know.
Yeah. It's a good point, actually. There doesn't seem to be a lot of vanity associated with him, because everything else is just so wacky around him, he doesn't have time to really think about himself, which is what he always thinks about.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, we've seen a lot of character growth from this particular Loki in a very short amount of time, and he's had a lot of perspective forced on him, you know, with the being in the TVA and the Infinity Stones being seemingly meaningless, and there's like so many Lokis and all of them are just destined to die and you know, all that, and he's like, I don't have time to think about my outfit. What does my outfit even mean anymore? Everything is meaningless.
Yeah. Well, it's easier for the costuming department to just put him in a shirt and tie and a pair of slacks.
Well, you say that. But this is a little peek behind the curtain, because I did a costume course. It was a musical theatre costume course, but, you know. And there's a lot of good money in weathering costumes, you know, like roughing them up, making them look like they've been used in certain ways. You have to get that blood splatter just right. And so because Tom Hiddleston wears the same, like, TVA suit for a lot of these episodes and a lot of these scenes, there is definitely multiple versions of that shirt, not only in different states of distress and weathering, but also ones that look the same should anything happen to it. You know, if you're doing a stunt where you're like rolling through the dirt and you've got to do it like 3 times, you're going to need that shirt 3 times to get dirty 3 times, you know? And so just getting that bit of grime down there and that little cut on the arm the same every time is kind of complicated.
Easier to dress them, and though, like between takes and
much
things.
Easier to dress, for sure. Much easier to dress, probably much easier to do stunts in.
than the Asgardian armor or whatever, you know, his big ostentatious Loki costume that he would wear before.
Yeah, from a costume standpoint, not necessarily, definitely less complicated, but no less effort.
Yeah.
Let's say, for sure.
It always has to be torn like on the arm at that one spot, that exact spot.
Yeah. I feel like there's a, like, continuity is, greatly overlooked by just sort of, you know, general fans. Because, you know, you've got to have the costumes continuous and the sets. The one that, of course, everyone notices is things like, you know, what was it, the Starbucks cup left out in the Game of Thrones table? You know, like, everyone noticed this, that kind of thing. So continuity is so important, because when it goes wrong, it will take you out of it a little bit.
Yeah, immersion breaking.
And if Loki was just putting on a clean shirt every scene, we'd notice.
Yeah. Well, I suppose they could just be like, I mean, it's essentially a wizard did it, right? He could just make his shirt clean if he wanted to, just every time, but... Yeah, I get what you mean. I think it's difficult to maintain that. But in terms of him getting dressed, it'll be a lot easier than it would normally be when he's in these things, because that Asgardian armor, I imagine he has to be put into it rather than putting it on himself.
Yeah. I imagine there's a lot of hidden fastenings in that costume, for sure. At least you don't have to do any quick changes on TV.
Well, that's true.
I pity anyone who has to do the future Avengers musical with any particular high budget.
Yeah. They'll find a way.
Though that would be a good challenge. That would be quite fun.
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, the Lokis are wherever they've been pruned to. Are they? Did they say that they're in the void right now, or is there a name to the planet? I can't remember if I caught it.
I think they just call it the void. I think the implication is that it's some kind of destroyed Earth, because you see Avengers Tower in the background, and there's other stuff.
I noticed there was a helicopter that said Thanos on it.
Yeah, which is a reference to a comic story that they did.
I thought so!
Where Thanos is literally flying around in a stupid little helicopter.
I thought so! I swear I heard that. And yeah. I was like, that seems like a thing.
It's good to remember these things when you're watching these films where they're establishing these villains as these, you know, cosmic level threats that shouldn't be trifled with. And then you think back to some of the stupid stuff they've ended up doing in the comics. With Darkseid, for example,
for sure.
In DC, there was one point where he was defeated and he just ended up sleeping on someone's couch.
So yeah, we're on this planet and there's this big cloud monster called Eliath. The shark, the monster
guard
in
dog,
the sky.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah, that thing looks cool. Particularly when they were fighting it at the end and it had like the skull, sort of looked a bit like a horse skull. Yeah. I was like, yes.
And
yes,
I was
please.
Wondering about Very if it was a nod too, because there was a period where superhero films were doing this. All cosmic beings that people fight will be cloud monsters. And you had Galactus, for example, was just a giant cloud. And then you had Parallax and Green Lantern. And that's the only two examples. But it seemed like for a time, this is what we're doing. And it's kind of lazy, I suppose. Or it was at the time. But this shows, no, you can do a giant cloud monster and it's really scary. Or it can be very threatening. But at the same time, it's not, well, wait, this version of this, for example, Galactus is not a cloud monster in the comics, so that's disappointing to see him reduced to that, whereas this is, as far as I know, a new creation or some obscure reference. I don't know which.
I was looking into it earlier. Eliath is in the comic. He is a creature of the timeless dimension called Limbo.
All right, okay.
I don't remember seeing like a picture of... No, there isn't really a picture of him. I think he is like a gaseous form.
Hmm.
So this is pretty on comic, and he does have some connection to some time-traveling characters that there have been theories bumping around about. The main thing I've been hearing people reference is Kang,
yeah.
if you've heard of him.
Yeah.
Kang the Conqueror, who I've just been reading about today, seems to be a time-traveling dictator that wants to take over all of history, and who has, interestingly, been confirmed for the next Ant-Man movie.
Yep, that's right.
And not only does he have a connection with Elias, I think he maybe tries to use him, perhaps, but also tries to force Ravonna Renslayer into marrying him, and they have a whole thing. So, you know, given that little bit of knowledge from the comics kind of suggests maybe we're going towards Kang, but the fandom has been very wrong before. Mephisto.
Yeah, Mephisto. John Krasinski turning up in WandaVision as well was a big one where people thought that was going to happen. For some reason, people said John Krasinski will be Mr. Fantastic, and that will be Monica's contact in WandaVision, but no.
I didn't hear that one. I would have I would have been all over that because I love the Fantastic Four. I would have been like, yes, 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 yes.
I think
kind of glad I didn't hear that one now.
Yeah. Kang is an obvious choice. However, I don't think that's going to be the answer because it's fine for people that know who these characters are outside of these shows. But if you don't, then it's just, who the hell is this? They just turn up and they have to explain them. They have to cover them. We've only got, maybe an hour left of the show. So how much can they really do? So, we're going to introduce Kang now, and then he'll reappear in Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, as it's going to be called. Yeah, and it's just not going to happen, I don't think. I think it's going to be internally consistent, and it will be someone we know or someone new that's connected to the show in some way. So it could be a variant of Loki himself, a variant of Ravonna, a variant of Mobius. I don't know, but I don't think it's going to be Kang. That's just my gut feeling.
Yeah, I vibe with that. I feel like, you know, if Kang is going to be involved in this series, it'll be like a... Like how Thanos was hinted at for a long time in the MCU, I feel like it might be like a little post-credits or a little shadowy figure or something like that. Yeah, I don't think he will be the big bad, if there is any.
No, because then you have to explain who he is in this episode. It's like, who are you? My name is Kang the Conqueror, and I do this, and this is why I've done this.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, I don't care. Let's just get on with something else. So it's just, the final episode is just the Kang explaining to you who he is, and then that's all it is. But Kang does have a really bizarre history in the comics. He was an Avengers villain, and he would just come back in time and just mess with them over and over again. And there was all this stuff about, there's alternate versions of himself that he talks to, the Council of Kangs, and he's a descendant of Reed Richards, and there's different versions of them. There's this Ramatut, I think his name is, the Pharaoh from the future, is like a version of Kang, and it's just all ridiculous. Comics are weird, and Jack Kirby-esque 60s, early 70s comics are even weirder.
So yeah, then we get to see Kid Loki's little underground bowling alley
clubhouse
sort of kingdom.
Let's just call it his clubhouse. He's a kid.
It's a clubhouse. I like that, yeah. With his bone decorated throne. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah. And everyone's subservient to him because he killed Thor. Like, that seems to be the, we'll follow the Loki that kills Thor. That's the hierarchy, because we had that situation earlier on in the show where Loki would only have someone work, or have a version of himself work for him. But if every version thinks that, then they can't work together.
Yeah, it's interesting. I love that they're all following Kid Loki.
Yeah.
You know, that's just brilliant.
Murders Thor as a child.
I wonder how he did it. You know, I wonder, you know, maybe he isn't all that dark as we think he is. Maybe that story from Thor Ragnarok, where he's like, Loki turned into a snake, and then when I picked the snake up to admire it, he went, blah, turned back and stabbed me.
Yeah.
Maybe he just did that and thought Thor would survive, but he didn't. And so now Kid Loki is so angsty about being stuck in the void that he's just turned into this dark, brooding, I killed Thor Loki.
Yeah. Could be.
Also, I don't know if anyone ate, I'm assuming no one ages in the void. Sylvie said that beyond the void, the time would be continuing, so you couldn't create a Nexus event because it's not written on the sacred timeline.
Yeah.
So that implies that time is moving where they are. But I don't know.
Yeah, maybe
how
not.
long have the Lokis been there? Are they aging? Are they choosing not to outwardly age? I don't know what the vibe is.
Yeah, well, it takes a long time for them to age, doesn't it? Because they live for so
This
many
is
thousands
true.
of years. And it seems that Tom Hiddleston is going to age into Richard E. Grant after a few thousand more years, which I can't really see it, but whatever. Okay, because I was expecting it to be a completely different backstory, but nope, I survived Thanos killing me and then just drifted around for a few thousand years and then decided to go do something, and that's when I was caught.
See, what I love about that is that I feel like a lot of these series have kind of like, in bits and pieces, addressed some sort of like, fan frustrations and fan theories. You know, that why did Loki just go at Thanos with a tiny knife?
Yeah.
Why didn't he use his powers? And that Loki is one of the answers to that question. Is, well, he did use his powers, everyone thought he was dead, and then he just vanished.
Yeah. I love the theory that in Infinity War, Bruce Banner was Loki the entire time. Because people
Yeah,
said
'cause he
that,
couldn't turn.
people said that he wasn't really acting like Bruce Banner. He couldn't Hulk out. He knew more than he should know as Bruce Banner because the Hulk knows who Thanos is, but he doesn't, that kind of stuff. I mean, it didn't pan out, but it was an okay theory. I was thinking it was not going to happen, but I quite like it.
I would like to see a Hulk there variant of Loki. That would
Yeah.
be cool.
Yeah.
Although, we did see a lot of versions of Loki,
We did.
including President Loki, which is a great comic I haven't read, but I've read like the sort of the plot for the first few. It seems great.
Yeah. Yeah, he just acts like a, well, he acts like a former president of the United States and gets elected and just by being that way, because apparently nothing is sacred anymore. You can just behave like that and succeed.
Yeah, his campaign is literally, I will lie to you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, which is very Scarfic. I like it. It's brilliant.
At least we know where we stand. Well, I'm voting for this guy.
Yeah, and what's even better about that is that obviously it works on Earth, but it doesn't work on a group of Lokis.
No.
You know, like you could kind of see it coming a little bit that this like little. This little gang rivalry wasn't going to work out for President Loki because he's President Loki of a group of Lokis. They're
Yeah.
not going to stay
No.
subservient.
No. He didn't kill Thor. Get on with
Yeah. Where's your Thor killing badge, President Loki, huh? We should. All right, now I kind of want to make like a MCU themed, like a Boy Scout like badge sash. It's like I killed Thor, metal husband who died twice kind of
Yeah.
thing. Yeah, that would be quite fun.
Just all the badges you can earn. Yeah, I killed Thor and all
Yeah.
that. Yeah. Boastful Thor, killing Captain America and Iron Man, and then getting all the Infinity Stones, apparently. But it's probably a lie.
Although I gotta say, what is a little bit, well, I mean, I found it a little bit of a missed opportunity or slightly disappointing, whichever way you want to think of it, that there wasn't. I mean, I know that President Loki was meant to be front and center of that rival gang of Lokis because they weren't going to be on for very long. He's a very quick visual character to take in. This Loki is President Loki. But I would have liked to see a bit more. Like scope on the other Lokis, you know, because they were all just kind of a bit apocalyptic, you know. One looked a bit hippie, one looked a bit apocalypse. One seemed to have like bike handles as the horns, which is all well and good, but they were just all gruff-looking men. And you know, Loki is gender fluid. His appearance is fluid. Although they all seem to pick different powers, so don't know how many of them can change their appearance so easily. But yeah, I'm disappointed there weren't more female and non-binary variants, because that just felt like a missed opportunity. And now it feels like the reason Sylvie, it feels like they're trying to say the reason that Sylvie is so unique is because she's a woman.
Yeah.
And like as a gender fluid and watching this gender fluid character, I'm like, oh, that's a bit disappointing.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I totally get that. And I think the part of the problem is when you have so many things like that, I mean, it's in a single episode, what tends to happen is they get defined by one trait and they have a distinctive look and they don't offer much else. Even the Lokis that you focus on, other than classic Loki, as the credits call them, they don't really have anything beyond their sort of mission statement of, I'm boastful Loki because I killed Captain America and Iron Man and got all the Infinity Stones. I'm Kid Loki because I killed Thor. I'm whatever, Alligator Loki. I'm an alligator. That's my trait. And then you don't get any more than that because the episode doesn't have time. Presidential Loki doesn't do anything. He just shows up and then he's only there to enable the Civil War, I guess. The Loki Civil War.
Loki Civil War.
Yeah, watch that film. So we already saw it. But yes. Everything moves so quickly. And I think it's not really a criticism, but one thing about the show is maybe this is the show to have 9 episodes because there's a lot more time that could be spent on certain things that we're not really getting to spend.
Yeah, I feel like I would have enjoyed more time hopping and meeting more Lokis. I don't know how, you know, depending on how the next episode comes together, how complicated that would have made things. But, you know, if anyone's going to do complicated, it's going to be Loki. And I definitely feel like, you know, it's just a, you know, it feels missed that they've gone, here is a female Loki. Wow, he's gender fluid. But they haven't told us why she was, I mean, I'm assuming they will tell us why she was pruned next episode.
Yeah,
maybe.
I'd imagine so.
But currently all we're going on is she's a woman.
Yeah.
Loki thinks she's impressive. She's a woman. Yeah. You know, and I'm just, I would have appreciated maybe instead of just a gang of like apocalypse looking Lokis, we could have had like a witch Loki, like a maybe a more sexy Loki, maybe like a young punk kind of teen Loki based, like a very androgynous looking Loki. I think that would have been a better take, but I understand that it was very quick visuals there.
And I have been wondering about gender fluid thing, because it was on a form, right? That was the only reference to it, which, yeah, cool, you've confirmed it. But is it only there because there is a female variant of Loki? Is that what they mean by gender fluid? Or is Loki himself, the Loki we follow, considered to be gender fluid? So it's that classic MCU thing. When I say classic, but it's that MCU thing of they maybe dangle something in front of you and then confirm it off screen almost. For example, Valkyrie, bisexual, supposed to be in Thor Ragnarok, but any reference to it was cut. Things like that.
She comes across as a very bi woman, but I'm saying that as a bisexual, you know?
And there's a deleted, yeah, there's a deleted scene where she kicks a woman out of her room or something like that, and it's implied what they were up to. But that's, and then when you see the flashback to someone being killed in front of her, you can infer from that that she was in a relationship with her. But again, it's like, or it's a good friend. You would have essentially the same reaction. Doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But it does matter. But it doesn't matter for that scene.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's the problem. You know, it's like you say that it's representation, but if you can take it either way, you're not actually representing the thing. You know? Yeah, I think the reason that Loki's form, the form of the current Loki, the variant we're following, says sex fluid, and people are taking that to mean that because he can control his physical form, his appearance, then his sex can be either or in between.
Yeah.
Because he has that power. But I mean, that's kind of a bit of a coward's way of saying a shape-shifting gender fluid, in my opinion.
And I did wonder if it just means it's because we know there's a female variant that we consider Loki to be gender fluid. But supposedly, anybody, right, would be gender fluid by that metric, because there'll be a female variant of me, for example, somewhere, you would imagine.
Yeah, the sacred timeline, I think the more you think about it, the more confusing it gets.
Yeah, the less it makes sense.
Which I guess is kind of a big thing in sci-fi, is at some point you just kind of have to accept that wibbly-wobbly it makes sense.
Yeah. Or next week they'll say, there is no such thing as a sacred timeline. Whoever's behind the curtain made it up just to appease someone or stop people from being driven mad or whatever. They've got some other agenda in place, but there's no such thing. That's why it makes no sense, because there's no such thing.
I mean, it could be, going along that thread, it could be that this person who is operating outside of this linear time is trying to get rid of the most powerful people from different parallel universes or different like multiverse timelines. You know, all these Lokis getting pruned, as Mobius said, they've pruned a lot of them. Maybe it's because in those timelines, Loki is one of the most powerful and could take them out. You know? I think that could, that would be interesting if that is, that's there, there you go, that's my little prediction.
Could be.
It's not about creating one timeline, it's about removing these powerful people from the branching timelines that are going to kind of happen regardless.
Yeah, no, that could be it. Certainly your guess is as good as mine in that respect, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think you're necessarily...
Obviously, we don't know.
I mean, it's difficult because none of it really makes sense at the moment, and we hope it will next week, but I've got a funny feeling we're going to get a bit of a WandaVision situation where it suggests massive change until the final episode where they put their toys back in the box and everything kind of returns back to normal. I mean, that's essential for franchise maintenance.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, you can have fun for a little while, but eventually you have to restore everything back to normal. Because some of the people will be watching a film in a few months and they don't want to be worried about the timeline being broken.
Yeah, this is true. I get the feeling that, you know, the unfortunate Disney vibes of, you know, them controlling the representation and what happens. Because Disney never say anything properly on screen in terms of representation unless they know their conservative fans aren't gonna like totally unsubscribe from Disney Plus or something, you know?
Yeah so they're always very cagey with it, which is
I saw a quiz yesterday or like an article that's like, what's your favorite out of the 15 first ever gay characters in Disney? It's like literally every time a vaguely gay character is in a major Disney film, everyone's like, oh my god, it's the first openly gay character. And we're like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Yeah, like in
the
Rise
first
of Skywalker,
one that they've hinted at.
They do a same sex kiss that they can easily cut for the Chinese market, for example.
Yeah, that was annoying. They were like, wow, look, we're so inclusive, we don't know who these people are.
Yeah
They were in the background.
The two lines in the whole trilogy, but sure, we know who they are.
Yeah. Way to go.
Yeah, and Marvel's pretty bad with that, although their approach to relationships or romantic relationships in general is quite cagey. They seem to avoid them. There's that I read an article once where it's like, you've got all these pretty people, but they're not horny, is what they said about it. So, yeah, you've got a lot of these. Because they seem to have ditched the whole love interest thing, because it used to be the superhero formula, Spider-Man or whatever, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies, everything. It used to be, you've got your hero and their love interest. And at some point, they will get together after dancing around each other for a couple hours, and it'll be all conflicted because they have, you know, their superpowers and whatever. Even in the first Iron Man, it was... They made a joke about that. I'd have a girlfriend who'd be all worried about me because I'm flying about and putting myself in danger all the time. And then that's one of the few relationships that stuck in the MCU, is the Tony Pepper one. But it was just kind of there. It wasn't really anything. And then I'm trying to think of any other romantic relationships they've really done since then.
Well, I mean...
Wanda and Vision, obviously.
Well, obviously. But They didn't do Steve and Peggy, no matter what anyone says. They didn't do it. It didn't happen.
Steve and Sharon, like, kind of.
Don't even. Yeah. I hate it so much. That was the worst thing that happened.
Scott and Hope a little bit, but that was only in the first one.
Yeah, they're a nice couple. But yeah, I feel like in trying to like get away from that, In trying to get away from like potentially like damsel in distress, sort of like sidelining women while keeping their big manly hero straight, I feel has just kind of led to underdeveloped relationships, and also a lot of just underdeveloped female characters. You know, I feel like we didn't really get much of Wanda until WandaVision, where we got all of her character and all of her motivations for the things they went through when they had all the flashbacks.
Yeah. And whatever her name is in Doctor Strange is a great example of just a pointless female
character. I don't
even
remember her name. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, Black Widow's getting a movie after she died.
Yeah.
I saw someone say like a vague sentence of it that was like, she's finally getting the ending she deserved. And I was like, okay, but it's already over.
Also, it's not an ending, it's an interquel, essentially, so yeah, it's not.
So yeah, I feel like, you know, they've kind of, in trying to keep away from damsel in distress, but also like on the straight and narrow, the Disney approved straight and narrow, they've kind of lost out on some potentially nice and interesting relationships. I mean, the relationships in the Netflix series is were always interesting and developed. They never worked out, because it was the Netflix series is they're all dark and edgy and everything's kind of awful. But you know, there was definitely a lot more to them. But Loki, yes. So Sylvie and Mobius also end up in the void after Sylvie prunes herself, which is a nice moment. It is surprisingly refreshing seeing main female characters have tense discussions. You know, like I just sort of didn't. I feel like you're not consciously thinking like, ah, feminism all the time, right? But watching Sylvie talk to was it B15 in the rain and just be like, you're all variants, you're like me. Like that moment, I was like, huh. I don't think I've seen a moment like that in the MCU between two women. And then the
No,
same
probably right.
again with Ravonna and Sylvie. You know, that's a. It could have very easily been, you know, just some man in charge or, you know, Loki hiding behind a desk. And I that's just. It's just nice. You know, and I don't really expect to care that much because, you know, it's not like it's groundbreaking representation or anything, but it is refreshing.
Yeah, I actually think Ravonna is quite underserved because she's very plot driven in this episode. Everything she does is about, let's get information, let's find answers, here's the answer to your questions. Whereas I think there's a lot more to the character than the episode allows to be because there's something tortured about her. Obviously, she's aware that she's being manipulated and she wants to know why. There was her desire to die last week. Stuff like that. I think there's
Yeah,
a lot more there than
she's.
there is time to explore, which is a shame. Because she's interesting.
Yeah, I'm hoping we get to see a bit of her, you know, or get to resolve some of her in the finale because she's definitely seems to be sowing a lot of seeds about her character and connections to other people. The way she says to Mobius, like, a friendship like us is rare, I'm not sure if that's supposed to be, like, you know, mirroring. Like Sylvie and Loki, or if it's supposed to be like a hint about what they are as variants or something like that. You know, there's something she knows.
Or they've just worked together for centuries and that bond has grown. But at the same time, she was manipulating him and he was trying to catch her out as well. So there's a bit of damage to that friendship already.
Yeah, although it was, I thought it was quite a nice. Or I guess sort of you know a good reveal when she asked Miss Minutes to get her all the files so that she can find whoever made the TVA and help them because they're in danger. And it's like, you know, the obviously she was trying to trick Sylvie by saying, I'm on your side, I hate them, they lied to me. But then to all out just be like, yeah, I want to help them, they're in danger. It's like, ooh, that was I found that quite nice.
Yeah, or she's working for herself and she's saying whatever she needs to say to make those things happen, to get whatever
Hey,
resource she
maybe she's a
needs.
Loki.
Maybe. Yeah. Everyone's a Loki. Just
The
the entire
end
TVA.
is just that everyone's a
Yeah.
Loki.
That's the twist. Everybody's Loki.
I mean, that's the thing with the multiverse theory. When there are infinite universes, there can be infinite Lokis, certainly enough to fill a strange, you know, non-linear bureaucratic organization.
Yeah, for sure. But it was actually one thing I loved about the post-apocalyptic wasteland, how it was full of Lokis, because certainly a theme of this show is survival. And it's that whole Lokis are survivors thing. And Loki's learning a lot about himself through seeing these variants and how they've survived and what they've done to survive. And he starts out, well, he's not quite fatalistic when he gets there, but it's the very, how do we get out of here? What the hell is going on? And then once he sees, all these Lokis have survived, despite the fact that they're banished to some post-apocalyptic wasteland. But that means I can get out, and that gives them the confidence. And then seeing how powerful he could be through what the others do gives them the confidence to think, well, I can be that powerful too. So it's a great theme. It's the surviving and what it takes to survive and what you need to be able to do with yourself and learn about yourself in order to survive. He has to be the best thing he can be, and he does that through seeing examples of how other versions of himself have risen to different aspects of their potential. I feel like he needs to hit his full potential, whereas they're all hitting little bits of his potential.
Which is great to see them actually address it. You know, when they were going up against Goliath and they were like, how did he do that? And I was like, I think us Lokis are more powerful than we think we are, which is fantastic. Might mean we actually get proper powerful Loki next episode.
Maybe.
I really hope we get them as like a proper badass team using their powers together.
Mm-hmm.
Would be fantastic.
Yeah, rather than just stabbing people all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Knives are very pretty until they when they clatter to the ground and your neck gets snapped. Is whatever classic Loki says.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting the wasteland. I mean, only seeming to be occupied by Lokis, and I mean it kind of, you know, makes sense that the humans on that ship that we saw kind of immediately getting wiped out by Goliath, you know, they were soldiers, they were going to shoot at it before they'd literally attempt to jump ship into a field and run away, and even then they probably wouldn't be fast enough. But yeah, it was making me think earlier, like, it would be funny if, you know, there was other heroes that had survived. You know, there's probably a ton of... See, that's the real reason we don't have the mutants in the MCU, is because there would be a ton of Wolverines in there,
yeah,
and none of them would die.
Just Goliath, like, snacking Goliath on has... Wolverines every time.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Goliath probably ate so many Wolverines he turned, like, yellow or something, you know, from all the spandex.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about what other heroes, you know, maybe would have survived Goliath, and would they have survived as long as the Lokis? Because most... Earth heroes don't have that lifespan, you know, unlike you know, like Wolverine is kind of a rare long-lived hero. But yeah, obviously this void is going to be simplified down for probably the one episode we're going to see it, but it's fun to think about. I'm big on what ifs.
Yeah, it was a,
you know, I'm excited for the show.
Yeah, I mean, it was in service of its theme, which is that Loki survive and Loki needs to learn that,
yeah,
he can,
sure,
survive. So that's what it is, and having other characters around would dilute that, other than Mobius,
yeah,
of course, who is there in his little pizza delivery car driving around.
I love that. I was like, is this a Pixar reference? I love it.
Some poor pizza delivery guy sent the pizza to the wrong house and got pruned. Some poor guy. Just
yeah. I'm honestly surprised that Disney didn't try and make it look even more like the Pizza Planet delivery vehicle, because that's in pretty much every Pixar movie they can fit it in, from Toy Story 1. And so when I saw, like, the big pizza on top of the car, I was like, Pizza Planet? Nah, this ain't Pixar. I feel like it's at least a slight nod to the Disney overlords.
Yeah, could be, yeah.
But also to Loki, to Mobius's origins in the 90s, because he's had that like a canned drink from the 90s that he was drinking, the jet skis, and then like this little pizza delivery car with the big cheesy pizza on top of it.
Yeah,
it's more Deliveroo these days. We don't really do big props on cars anymore.
Just turns up on his bike with the Deliveroo container on the back.
That would be amazing. Yeah. Now I kind of want to draw that, you know, like
you should,
like him on a Deliveroo bike with like the big square rucksack and like Crocodile Loki, yeah, sticking out of the top of it. Current Loki sitting on the handlebar screaming, and like Sylvie's just kind of like balanced on like the back wheel.
Well, you have to do it now. It's recorded. You have to do it. You've said it.
It's recorded. I got to do it now. So yeah, I think it's been a good episode overall. I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed all the episodes.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really good. I was constantly engaged by it. I think some of the character moments, the emotional character moments, really worked. I know there's a lot of chatter about the Loki-Sylvie connection and what it means and whether it's disgusting to pursue a relationship with your own variant or not is a separate debate. But the scenes they share together is really interesting, because obviously we know that Loki's concept of loyalty is as fluid as his gender. So he might be loyal in one moment, but not in the next, that kind of thing. So I do believe that he thinks he's sincere when he says to Sylvia, I'm a different person now, I'm not going to betray you, I promise. But if things start swinging in a different direction, there's a good chance he'll fall back on old habits, because that's what he does, let's face it. And I'd actually quite like to see that, just him falling back on that. But it's a very tender moment of support that they share, and I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, so I've been thinking about the relationship between Loki and Sylvie, and what kind of relationship it is and what they're putting out there. And to sort of the general sort of reading of it would be that Loki fancies Sylvie. We don't know if Sylvie fancies him back. But there's a lot more to affection and trust than just romance between a man and a woman. And I feel like there could be, you know, there's a lot of nuances in relationships, and there is a lot of nuances in queer relationships. And I feel like, and in platonic relationships, you know, that could be going on here, and it would be nice, but I feel like when doing it so subtly in front of, in a, well, I'm not going to say straight majority, but the straights are the loudest, usually. And so they're not going to understand what these subtleties could be. So I was thinking about it, and I think that maybe neither of these Lokis, like neither Loki or Sylvie, have had one person that they've fallen for any number of times. They've just had like flings, it seems. And so I don't think they know what a long-term romance looks like. And I don't think they know truly what a long-term friendship looks like. Sylvie certainly doesn't, because she's just been hanging out in apocalypses. Loki isn't really friends with Thor's friends, doesn't really have any of his own, and a brother, adopted brother or whatever relationship is very different. And we haven't seen Loki had any romance, and he didn't say that there was any specific person he's romanced. So they don't, I get the feeling that these variants don't know what a long-term and a deeper romantic relationship looks like to them. And so this could be like a very like sort of valid and I think more common than people like to admit moment of confusion between the two of them. Because as Sylvie said, she's never had a friend, she doesn't really know what to do, she doesn't really know what it's like. And I don't think Loki's had like a true friend, a long-standing friend, or a long-standing relationship. And so it could be that, you know, maybe he thinks, oh, do I fancy her? That's the only feeling I'm vaguely familiar with, because I don't love her like a sister, because it's different to how I feel about Thor. But I don't love her like a fling, and I don't love her like a passing friend. There's something more to this. So, you know, he could be confused. He could think it's romantic, and maybe it's just intensely platonic. That's a thing. It could be queer platonic. You know, there's kind of a beautiful spectrum of romantic and platonic affection that I feel like a lot of people in this sort of like heteronormative sex focused society doesn't really think about or know about. And so as a person who has a few queer platonic relationships, and I'm asexual, so I think very intensely about the difference between my romantic feelings and my platonic feelings, because I know no matter what, it's not a sexual feeling. So, you know, both of these Lokis are sexual beings, but it's implied. So they've also got that feeling out in the mix, because obviously they're both hot, so, you know, what are they thinking? I think they're both confused. And I don't think they will end up together. I'm kind of hoping they won't, considering they finally came out with bisexual, and then they just made them as a male-female relationship.
Yeah.
You know, which as a bisexual is like, you know, bisexuals dating male-female is extremely valid, doesn't make you any less bisexual, and that is a problem that a lot of bisexual people face is that when they get into these male-female relationships, people are like, oh, well, you're not bi, are you? You're just straight. Or you look straight, so you're not gay anymore. But at the same time, would really just like some MLM, some man-loving man representation on screen. So if Loki's going to be with anyone, now he's come out as bi, or if Sylvie's going to be with anyone, we'd kind of prefer it to be someone who's non-binary or of the same gender. So I kind of feel like they're confused and just trying to stumble through their feelings on top of everything else that is happening.
I think that's a...
That's my take on it.
No, I think that's a really fascinating take. And I think in general, maybe through media, through whatever else, as a society, as a species, I guess, our understanding of what relationships are is continuing to evolve. And it's not as simple as friendship or romance. There's a lot of nuance in between. I have a lot of friends that I regard in a familial sense or through my own... I've been through therapy this year. I don't mind admitting that. And through that, I've kind of gotten in touch with feelings that I was unable to reconcile about people that I know and people that I speak to and things like that. So I've ended up telling people who are my friends that I love them. I've never done that before. Not really. I've not really...
That's fantastic. Yeah.
And like when I say that I love them, I don't mean, you know, I think we should be a couple. I don't like... But on some level, my understanding of I should only be telling people I love them if I'm related to them or if that's what I feel about them. You know, if I'm intending to pursue something romantic, but it's not that at all. And I think that... So I think that ties in a bit to the Loki-Sylvie thing. So they could love each other completely and... It has nothing to do with romance. It's an affectionate feeling they have for one another. But there's also this whole backstory with Loki has about self-loathing. When he was, from a very young age, Odin would tell him, you're not going to be king, Thor is. So you're already the second favourite son, I'm afraid. Sorry. Also adopted, as he finds out later. And all that stuff. So what he's... And certainly in the first Thor film, you get the impression he's a bit of a hangers-on with the Warriors 3 and Sif and so on. He's not... Like, it's not the Warriors 4, it's the Warriors 3, Loki and Sif. Sif is, I guess, purposely puts herself apart from them because she wants to be her own person, which is great. And Loki is just, well, I'm hanging around with these people because I'm Thor's brother, but they don't really want me here. And then as soon as they get the opportunity to get rid of him, they're all like, yeah, piss off, Loki, we don't like you. And that's what he's dealing with, so self-loathing. So connecting to Sylvie in a way is a lot of... learning to love himself because she is him or she's a version of him. And there's those kinds of things that deepen these relationships that are more complicated than your standard thing. And maybe people are just walking into these shows because, let's face it, we have been conditioned to comic book storytelling. You've got the male or female hero. They'll have a core love interest. They'll dance around for a bit. There'll maybe be a few side love interests that populate their lives here and there. And then they'll eventually get together and... one of them will probably get killed and then brought back to life and then killed again and so on until, well, it never ends. They just keep rebooting and rebooting. So
yeah.
you can be, or people can be forgiven for expecting the whole, this is a love story. And even...
Yeah, totally. I feel like a lot of people will read it like that because that's what we're used to seeing. Yeah.
And even Mobius assumes that's what it is. And even Loki on some level assumes that's what it is. But yeah, I think there's something... more abstract there, more interesting, a lot deeper. And I think whether they lean into it or not is up in the air. I don't think they will, but I would love if they just sat and had a open and frank discussion about, no, relationships are weird. Relationships are complicated. They're confusing. They're chaotic. And they're not just under certain headings all the time.
I agree. I think my sort of like favorite like resolution in this series of that relationship would be, you know, after everything, and you know that what would be typically would be that, you know, that Pepper Tony conversation on the roof. It's like, you know what I mean, of them getting together or getting back together or whatever. I think mine would be, you know, like she's like, oh, what did you want to tell me? Or Loki's like, ah, so I thought I fancied you romantically, but romance, you're me, I'm you, I don't, I think I just love you, buddy. You know, like something like that. And they're both just like, I don't get it either.
Yeah. And by loving you, I love myself and recognize my worth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be my favorite kind of ending to it with only one episode to go. I think the moral of the story is definitely just tell your friends you love them.
Yeah.
All the time. I love doing that.
Yeah.
Because once you start getting it, you realise how kind of deprived you were of it before, I have found.
Yeah, and there's also the thing about me being male, the male archetype of, no, we're tough, we don't talk about our feelings, and how much mental anguish is that causing people because they're having these feelings and trained to think we're not allowed to talk about them. And people think it's weird when I do, or the perception is that anyway. And some people do think it's weird when you start talking about your feelings. It's, you know, they throw around words like fruity and all that stuff. And it's,
yeah.
You know, and it is obviously discouraging. And I think certainly one thing I've learned this year is not to hide from feelings, or, you know, not that I don't still have trouble with them, but don't hide from them.
Yeah. They won't go away. It'll be nice to see Loki learn that. Yeah, they won't go away. Yeah. Gotta do something with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, speaking of platonic affection and male affection, I actually cheered when Loki and Mobius hugged.
I thought that was a lovely
moment. I didn't think
moment.
It was going to happen. Yeah. I didn't. I was so sad because we never got the hug between Thor and Loki in Ragnarok. And we don't get a lot of guys hugging. You know, we get like a brief hug between... I think the only people that really hug are like Bucky and Steve. But like... ever since Winter Soldier, that's all we see them do together is just like one hug, then we fight, you know? So it was just, oh, it made me so happy. You know, it wasn't just a manly handshake. Like, Mobius went in for the manly handshake. He's a man from the 90s. It makes sense. And then Loki's face did the thing where he just sort of softened his look and he's like, nah, man, we hugging. And, oh... so happy.
Yeah, everybody loves a hug. You know, certainly missed them over the last 18 months or however long it's been.
Oh, for sure. Yes, it was a wonderful moment, and I'm very pleased with that moment.
Yeah, it was good, and it was earned as well. I do believe their friendship, because every scene they share together,
totally.
It's the I said in my review of the previous episode, they were having a game of one-upmanship, or who could outlie the other one. And
yeah.
That kind of stuff. So I love the way they interact. And Owen Wilson usually annoys me in films. I usually find him really irritating, but he doesn't irritate me here. So Marvel, well done. You've made me engage with Owen Wilson, something I didn't believe was possible.
Yeah, I've not seen him really do anything particularly serious. Like, I haven't seen Wonder, which I imagine is a bit more of a serious and calmer sort of character than my favourite, which is Jedediah in Night at the Museum. Like, I haven't really seen him in that much. But yeah, I think Mobius is quite sweet and, you know, just a really nice and interesting character.
Yeah, but
nice and soft with Loki.
Well, he had that line about, you know, why are you going back to the TVA, and he just said, I just want people to know the truth. That's just such a casually noble and altruistic statement, and he just says it.
I love
it,
his little therapy sessions.
Yeah,
I love his little therapy session with the other Lokis.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah, it's like, I don't know if this alligator is a Loki. He might be lying, which makes him even more likely to be a Loki.
That was so sweet. We briefly mentioned classic Loki sacrifice earlier, and it was a really beautiful moment. You know, it's kind of the ridiculous level costume, but you know, I think Loki is really kind of in awe of classic Loki and how long he lived, but he's also like really kind of tragic. And Loki's like, so what, is that my fate to just die or be alone until someone kills me off, you know, when I try for company again? But then he sees how much power the classic Loki yields just to protect him and Sylvie and to help them. And I think that moment gave Loki a lot of hope, not only just about his powers, but about what it means to be a Loki.
Yeah, it was the Gandalf Balrog moment as well. It reminded me a lot of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was interesting, though, because, you know, as classic Loki got, like, consumed by Eliath, the effects weren't consistent. Like, I don't know if this was just me, because I didn't actually get to watch it all the way through a second time today because my internet was being a nightmare. But if I'm remembering correctly from when I watched it last night, so, like, the smoke kind of, like, engulfs, but from the other side of him, like, where his cape is flying out behind him, it looked more like it dusted away. Like, it kind of, like, not exactly like the Thanos one, a bit kind of chunkier than that, but, like, it sort of looked like it was flowing that way, and, like, blowing away. So, like, you know, like, I don't know if that was just, like, a part of the effects. I just felt like they were going in different directions. Like, maybe classic Loki was trying to pull away using his powers, and we don't know if he was successful. Obviously, the impression is that he died, but the general idea in movies that unless you see an actual body, usually with someone crying over it, they're not officially dead. Particularly not a Loki. So, you know, maybe we'll have, like, an Into the Loki-verse kind of moment.
Maybe.
Where he did get away.
And he also said that, he survived the last time because he conjured up an illusion that was so real that it fooled Thanos. So,
yeah,
they've already established that as a possibility, so, I suppose. It just depends. There's only one episode left.
I mean, obviously that Asgard, illusion was huge. But not necessarily complicated. Like, it wasn't moving parts. You know, it was just the big city.
Just a hologram.
So then, So, you know, that's why I was particularly sus of the effects that I saw. You know, it might just be making a mountain out of a molehill, but, you know, I feel like I saw a little hint of something.
Yeah, I never really noticed to that degree. I've only seen the episode once, but yeah, take your word for it. If you notice something was a bit off, then maybe the post-credit scene in the next episode will be just classic Loki is alive and well somewhere, living it up.
Yeah, maybe it's just him coming back with, like, you know, like the typical kind of cartoon, like, burnt costume with, like, the little fire still going on his hair that he, like, pinches out.
Yeah, it could be.
Kids Loki, like, took you long enough.
Could happen.
That would be great. It could. Have you got anything else that you thought about this episode?
The Eliath fight was
pretty deep.
It was beautifully done, beautifully rendered. The score was excellent. Made a significant threat. The victory was a character-driven victory rather than it just being a, you know, we'll hit this thing until we defeat it. I think that was great. It was one of the better sequences I've seen in a long time in one of these sorts of things. Just so perfectly put together.
I feel like them using their powers against Eliath together, I've, like, kind of reminiscent of when the Guardians, you know, all held hands to handle the Infinity Stone. But I feel like it just had it's a different type of thing. This is about, like, self-belief particularly self-belief, but also technically friendship, and then that's like a found family kind of thing. But yeah, it kind of reminded me of that, but I found this a lot more, like, emotionally kind of engaging. I thought it was a really nice moment.
And there was a little moment where Loki was falling back on old habits. It was a bit where Sylvie was facing up against Eliath and he went and stood behind her. Just, it'll get you first. So it's old habits die hard. He's not quite there yet. He's not fully.
And also
developed.
Waving like the little sword, like, come and get me.
A little flaming sword for whatever reason. Yeah, what was that all about? It was a great sequence. It was just so
it was
brilliantly put together.
But all in all, good episode. Very excited for the finale.
Yes, I'm looking forward to seeing how it all wraps up and how I don't predict how it wraps up. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yes. So I've had a great time. I hope you have too.
It's been a great discussion. Right? Yeah, it's been a fantastic discussion.
Where can the people find you?
So on here, you can find me on previous podcast 616. If you want to listen to me chat about WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier, you can find me here. Upcoming, I will be on Rarely Going, which is our Star Trek Lower Decks podcast. I've been on a couple of real talks, talking about Superman Returns and A Quiet Place 2, and Fast 9, which is just an hour or so of me just criticising Fast 9 because I don't like Fast and Furious. Outside of We Made This, you can find me on Neil Before Blog, where I review Loki, for example, and other things like Superman and Lois and Legends of Tomorrow, all the DC stuff. I don't discriminate. I love Marvel and DC equally. They are fine by me. And there's a podcast attached there called Neil Before Pod, where I've done a bunch of interviews with people. Catherine McNamara is a big boost, one that I'm very proud of, that I managed to get a hold of her for 15 minutes. That was a really good one for me and a bunch of other people, so listen to them. And on Twitter, it's just Neil Before Blog, Facebook, Neil Before Blog. On Twitter, I'm personally found under Nemesis4909, which I'm obliged to tell you is not a Star Trek reference, or at least it wasn't when I chose it. It started off as a Resident Evil reference, because I love those games, and then became a Star Trek reference as well. So sometimes all my interests align, which is great. So you can find me there.
Ah, the stars alone.
Sometimes they do. Beautiful. Sometimes.
And I've been Carpenter. You can find me on the social medias at vintage_T3A, Vintage T. I do art, and I'm only really on podcast 616. You can also find me in an episode of the Nightmare Portal. I'm also part of another fantasy fictional podcast that is only just starting to awaken their social media. So when I've got the word from the writer, I will definitely be shouting all about that, because it's exciting and I think your guys will love it. Thanks for joining us for another episode, and remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network, and Loki is not the only thing we're discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what you might have missed on the network in just a moment. We'll see you next time on Podcast 616, where we are burdened with glorious purpose to talk about the MCU.
Elsewhere on We Made This. Pick a disc.
The chorus feels like it's improvised as well.
It's improvised, but I also think it's like respect, because everybody gets a shout out. Busta Rhymes in effect, Shahid is in effect, Five Dog is in effect, and it ends, I think, towards the end. Towards the end, who's in the house? Ron Carter is in the house. So I kind of think of it, this is going to be very professorial sounding, but if you write a research paper and, you know, you put all your citations of your sources.
Yeah.
It's all the citations. These are all the folks that made this come together.
he's reading the Wikipedia footnotes for this song, isn't he? So
like 30, exactly.
20 years before it came in effect and stuff.
Make It So, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
To your theory, Gene Roddenberry, one of his golden rules was that conflict always had to be external, right? Like, it couldn't be internal. You couldn't have, the main drama being between the two people on the show. It always had to be humanity fighting outward, because we were already connected and we had already resolved most of those issues, right? And as Trek has evolved and we've started to incorporate many of the real life drama that can occur between actual people, which I think it's made the show all the better for it.
Yeah.
But I think you're on to something.
Right in the childhood.
The big thing is, Raven has a vision that the job she was going for, she didn't get, because the woman says to Raven's vision, I don't hire black people. We cringe.
The fact that it was done with the actor playing the racist job assistant,
Chloe,
did it with real venom, and the kind of,
she did it throughout everything though. Like,
it was horrible.
She was not so subtle with how she felt about black people. Chelsea couldn't pick up on it.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.
So, if I'm the 616 variant, who are you?
I'm the original. I'm the 616 variant. But I'm not a variant. I'm the original.
Right. And who's the alligator with the WandaVision t-shirt?
Oh, that's just Kurt. Don't pay him any mind. It's just Kurt. He likes WandaVision. And he's an alligator.